Is that even legal? It's a question we ask ourselves on a daily basis. We ask it about our neighbors. We ask it about our elected officials. We ask it about our family. And sometimes we ask it to ourselves. The law is complex and it impacts everyone all the time. And that's why we are here. I'm attorney Bob Sewell, and this is season 5 of the Worldwide Podcast that explores that one burning question, is that even legal? Let's go. We're welcoming back today Ike Devsey. Ike is a preeminent asset protection attorney. He's known all throughout the United States for what he does, which is asset protection. He helps his clients manage well over $1 billion worth of assets. Ike, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Good to be with you.
So I wanted to have you on because there's a story in my hometown, Gilbert, Arizona. It's got some national attention, but it's also been flaming hot here in the valley. And this, they call it the Gilbert Goons. So, and what's interesting is, you know, just a brief history is the Gilbert Goons, mostly affluent, mostly white, mostly some sort of religious affiliation. And they were going out and randomly targeting kids and in a gang style, if not a gang, beating them up. And then afterwards, threatening them if they were exposed and threatening more retaliation if they have any sort of repercussions against them. It was really ugly, and it culminated when some of these kids decided to go out to a party in a neighboring town, and they beat a kid up so bad that 3 days or 2 days later, he died. He succumbed. Absolutely tragic result. And now, you know, and it appears that, you know, that a lot of people knew. They gave themselves the moniker Gilbert Goons, and they were active on social media, and they posted things on social media. I mean, how they weren't arrested in advance, I don't know. But what's amazing to me now is the repercussions to the parents. Now their parents are incurring real consequences for their children's action. Is that even legal?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And look, parental liability is nothing new. And so let's have this discussion about parental liability in the context of the Gilbert Goons, right? And it could easily be the Scottsdale Stranglers or the Phoenix Felons or anything else. So there's nothing particular about Gilbert as a community that I think is unique and created these kids and their gang and their problems and the heinous acts they did and the tragedy of the death of Preston Lord that resulted from that allegedly. But every year I put out a warning that's nearly identical, and I put it out just before spring break. And what we talk about there is the idea of parental liability in the context of the 100 deadliest days of the year, the time between Memorial Day and Labor Day, where we see the highest number of fatalities, injuries, accidents, things like that, because kids are out for the summer, they're on spring break, they're on summer vacation, and this is grade school children, high school children, and even college age children who might be adult aged, are coming home, they're using their parents' homes, cars, boats, cabins, ATVs, right? And so all of that activity, they're partying, they're driving more, they're spending more time unsupervised, creates very significant liability for their parents. But parental liability goes way beyond car accidents, which is the number one thing that most people, especially the parents of teenagers, are worried about. And rightly they should be, right? I think that anybody who has a teenage child in their home and doesn't have a $2 million umbrella on their car, whether you make $100,000 a year or $2 million a year or something more than that, you're insane. I mean, that is the most basic thing that you would do to protect yourself. But we have seen parents become liable for their actions of their children for many different things. We've seen it for bullying, cyberbullying, assault, theft, vandalism, sexual assault, breaking and entering, throwing parties in a vacant home in a gated community in North Scottsdale and doing six figures in damage to the home when you have 200 kids come in and have a party, right? So this liability takes many different forms. And this is just an echo of that. And what have we seen here in Arizona with the Gilbert goons? Well, we've seen, I saw one report that said that one of the parents has lost their business and had their franchise pulled because of the negative association with this whole event and these children. We've seen, I'm aware of at least two people who have been laid off, if not terminated, for their employment because of their association with this. And now my understanding is that there are at least two attorneys in town that are filing multiple lawsuits against the parents of these children for damages, for, you know, for whatever they have done. And those claims obviously will be different depending on what exactly each child is accused of or there's proof of them doing. And then on top of that, add the legal fees.
Yeah.
Whether I think it is natural for every parent to want to protect their child, even if their child has done something bad. And a lot of these people are going to be digging deep into their savings, into their retirement funds, into their home equity, and spending six figures on legal fees to try and minimize the penalty that these children are going to face. And in some cases, these parents are going to be spending six figures in defending themselves against the lawsuits that are coming.
Now, there's no better fee than a legal fee, okay? So we don't want to disparage the legal fees.
Right.
No, I'm kidding. But it is, it is. I mean, the vindictive part of me says, well, these parents got what's coming to them, and then the other part of me says, well, I don't know. I wasn't in that house, and I didn't have their life experience, and. You know, but the other part of me says, I really could be held liable for what my kid does. I mean, really?
Yeah. I absolutely understand what you're saying on both sides of that. Right. On the one hand, we want to make sure that this never happens again.
Right.
That they're a group of teenage, you know, young adult, mostly males, that go out and terrorize a community and beat up other children and kill a child and do property crimes. That's obviously not acceptable. And the parents involved, there are layers, right? There are degrees of some of them had no idea their children were doing this. Some of them maybe had a little bit of an idea and thought it was harmless.
Yeah.
Some of them were fully aware of it and ignored it.
Yeah.
Some of them are aggressively defending the actions of these kids that are indefensible, right?
Right.
So we range from clueless to complicit.
Yeah.
And are all of those people equally liable? Should they be equally liable? I don't know. That's a decision for the courts to make.
Yeah.
But my job as an asset protection attorney is to look at anybody who comes into my office and say, oh, you've got four teenage kids in your house. Are they? Do you have proper insurance in place, right? And to help them manage that risk, whether it's an accident or whether it's something more intentional, like we're talking about in this context.
I should have thought of it that way before I even posed the question, because it whether or not they should be liable doesn't matter. Whether or not, because if from your perspective, we all know what's going to happen. If attorneys, where there's an injury, attorneys find a remedy. And the remedy is with the person who has the money. And hence, we need asset protection.
Absolutely. Look, I have a list of risk factors that I walk my clients through. And it's not a complete list, but it kind of boiled down to, hey, here are 12 or 13 of the most common things that I see. And one of those is, do you have children? Right?
Yeah.
That's one of my risk factor lists. And are those children using your homes, using your cars?
Yeah.
Do they drive? You know, we look at all of those details as part of this. And one of the other questions is, you know, are you a target because you are collectible? Right? There are two kinds of people that lawyers don't sue. People who don't have any money.
Yep.
Or people who have money they can't reach.
Yep.
I think we would all prefer to be in that second category.
Yep.
And if it was my child that was injured, I would aggressively want to punish the people who were responsible
for it. Oh, heck yeah.
There's no doubt. The moral outrage that these parents and these communities feel is totally justified. I also can put myself, because I guess of what I do for a living, in the shoes of the innocent parent who has worked their whole life to build a business, provide for their children, do all the things that we, that you and I hear parents say, oh, I built this business because I want my kids to have what I never had. Right. Or I want, you know, I want to make sure my family's provided for, right? And should that person lose everything because of something they didn't do and weren't aware of? And how do we make sure that that doesn't happen, right? Which is what, which is what's my job. And so when I look at these things, you know, we warn people that sometimes, especially with affluent people, and this community is
considered, has a lot of affluent people.
Considered to be an affluent community. It's at minimum, I think it's described as an upper middle class, upper class community, whatever that means. And sometimes people are wearing the emperor's new clothes, and they assume that because we live in a certain zip code, or we have a certain income, or we go to a certain church, or whatever the factors are, not my kid. My kid would never do this. Our children are involved in this. We don't have these problems. And as someone who works primarily, almost exclusively, with high net worth individuals, I will tell you that those kids get in trouble as much, if not more, than anybody else's kids. And in some cases, it's simply because they have access to things that allow them to do harm.
Yeah.
Cars, homes, boats, ATVs, money.
Yep.
Right? Those things can all facilitate behavior that leads to problems, you know. And we talked, you know, so somebody asked me recently, I said, well, what do you do? How do you protect yourself from being the next Gilbert Goon's parents? And I said, well, the first layer of that protection is something that Bob and I, or any other attorney and I, can't teach you. That's good parenting. It's management. It's leadership. It's being involved in your children's life. It's being aware of what they're doing. It's monitoring their social media usage. It's setting rules for the use of your car, your home, your boat, your cabin, your property, and enforcing those rules. Because sometimes when a parent will come to me and say, we had this liability or that, and I'll say, well, what have you do, or how did you punish that child, or what have you done to limit their ability to do this again? And the thing I sometimes I hear is, he just won't listen.
Yeah.
Right now, there is nothing I can do about that as an attorney.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah,
so the first layer of protection is always the family, the parents being involved, keeping an eye on things, enforcing rules. The next layer of protection that we want every parent to have in place is a very high limit of insurance. Have that umbrella policy on your home and your cars. Have the best umbrella policy available that is not the cheapest one that you went online and found, but the one that covers the most things, including perhaps some of the actions of your children, things like bullying, cyberbullying, some of these other things. There are umbrella policies that can cover some of those. And then finally, let's have our assets organized from an estate plan to an asset protection plan in a way that makes those assets legally distinct from any personal or professional liability that we incur in the future. Let's make sure that we're in a position where we have locked in every level of success, and we have made that success, whether it is in the form of an income stream for a business or the ownership of a piece of real estate or money in the bank. Let's make sure that those things are well compartmentalized and out of the reach of whatever may happen, this risk or any other. And that's good basic planning that we do as asset protection attorneys. That is our primary responsibility, because we never know where this risk is coming from.
Yeah.
Right? It could be an employee lawsuit. It could be an investor lawsuit. It could be a business deal gone bad. It could be a construction defect claim for a builder. It could be a medical malpractice claim for a doctor. Or it could be one of your kids goes out and does something stupid that you weren't aware about, and it costs you your savings and your retirement.
Yeah. And the thing that I've learned from you, I mean, how long have we known each other? 10 years? It's got to be.
At least.
Yeah. And the thing I've learned from you is, when it comes to asset protection, you don't just get these things out of the Cracker Jack's box. You know, you don't just order it up on the internet. It involves carefully looking at your assets, at your potential risks with your attorney, then organizing these things in a very particular way for you and you alone, right? And then layering it with insurance and whatever else you think you need to do. And then comparing, you know, your risk to your level of how much, you know, how you say, okay, I feel this level of risk is okay for me, or I'm okay losing this and or spending this in taxes or losing control of this or not losing control of that. All those factors. It's sort of like I envision if I was, you know, the type of guy that had to really strategize about this, that it would be, I'd come to you as my true counselor, my mental health therapist for my assets, right? And that's what you do, right?
Yeah. I mean, all of those factors that you mentioned are part of the calculation and what is the right tool or how much is enough or what's good enough for this person, right? So somebody who is retired and has a significant amount of wealth should have some asset protection planning in place because they're not refilling that bank account anymore the same way that they used to, right? Mm-hmm. But their risk level is certainly much lower than my entrepreneur client who's actively running four businesses.
Right.
Right. So those two people might have identical net worths, but they need different planning. They also have different needs in terms of access. So one of the most effective forms of asset protection that we could ever conceive of is one of the simplest, which is, let's say I have $5 million and I put that $5 million in an irrevocable trust for Bob. It is forever out of my reach and control. A third party trustee controls that trust. And if I get sued for anything going forward, that money that we put into that trust for Bob before this bad thing happened is unreachable. That works.
Yeah, that works.
The problem is I no longer have my $5 million that maybe I needed to use it, that capital to generate more income, maybe needed to reinvest it. Maybe I'm not financially at the point where I can make those kind of large gifts and cut that out of my use and control forever. Right. Yeah. And even my wealthiest clients often mentally, even though financially they can do it, mentally aren't there yet. They're not ready to give up control and just say that, wait a minute, I spent 20 years earning and leveraging up to buy this office building that I'm putting into this trust for my kids. And I can never touch it or use it or get a dollar out of it again or control anything that happens to it. And I have to put that in the hands of a third party trustee. Some people are ready for that. Some people are not.
Right.
Some people need a greater degree of control. Some people need to be able to have investment funds that they get a call on a Monday about an opportunity on a Tuesday, and they need to be able to write a check the same day. So all of these factors, all of these unique things are part of the calculation that goes into what's the right tool set for this person.
Right.
Right. Because there are many ways to achieve the same result. From the lawyer's desk, they're all kind of the same. But from the other side of the table, with the client, the person whose money it is, it's very, very different.
And then the other part of the counseling is, oh, you're a parent. And do you have boats? Do you have ATVs? Do you have side-by-sides? And do you let your kids do these things by themselves? And well, you're living a more risky lifestyle, you know?
Absolutely. In fact, I have a questionnaire that I use to help figure out what a person's risk factor is when I'm working with them as a client, what their risk factors are. One of them is children. And then exactly as you said, how many vehicles are in your home? Who holds title to those vehicles? Is it you and your spouse? Or does one of the kids drive a car that's leased by your medical practice because you're getting a tax write-off?
Yeah.
Right. So you're taking the most dangerous thing that you do every day, which is pilot your 4,000 or 5,000 pound missile between everybody else's on the 101. And you're linking it to the thing that provides your family's income and is the most valuable thing you own. Right. So we do ask those questions and we ask, what toys do you have? Boats, planes, RVs, et cetera, et cetera. We ask about, do you have vacation homes? We ask about how much insurance you have in place. And like I said, $2 million is the starting point even for regular, everyday working folks, in my opinion right now. Because, look, if you kill or injure somebody in a car accident, $1 million isn't going to cover it anymore if they have a permanent injury or a death. Yeah. And just the property damage alone. I mean, every new car on the road these days is ridiculously expensive.
Yep.
Right? You can go get a new soccer mom mobile, a new Tahoe, and that's close to six figures.
Yeah.
Right. So that $1 million was a big number in the 1970s. And it's a much smaller number in 2024.
Yeah.
And so we look at all those factors. You know, and as I said, this is a tragic case that has many different factors. And some of these parents were fully aware of it, I'm sure. And some of them were completely unaware that their child, not only was their child doing something, but was even capable of doing something like that.
Yeah.
And that's the problem that we have with parental liability. And in Arizona, we have statutes that say a couple of interesting things. Number one, it says that parents are liable for the actions of their children if you have custody of your child. And the second thing it says is nothing in this statute shall require an insurer or shall prevent an insurer from excluding intentional acts of their children. So you might have that insurance in place, and if your child intentionally assaulted somebody, drove a car into them, participated in street racing and these street takeovers that we see on the news, and you see them on TikTok where the kids pull into an intersection, all of a sudden there's 300 people standing there and they're doing donuts and somebody gets run over invariably.
Yeah.
They can, your insurance coverage could potentially exclude something like that, which puts that bill right on you and your house and your savings and everything else that you've ever worked for. So these are issues that, you know, like I said, can be wide ranging. And in most cases, it is an accident. You know, it is not very common that I at least have had to deal with intentional acts. We've had those bullying acts, those bullying claims and cyberbullying and fights and assaults and theft and vandalism, all of those things. But the biggest and most regularly recurring exposures are accident based.
Yeah. If I'm a parent, I'm looking, hearing this conversation, and I say, you know, I need to do some asset protection. I have a business. I have or multiple businesses. How am I going to get a hold of you?
The best way to find me is probably just through my website, which is www.proassetprotection.com, P-R-O, Asset Protection. You'll be able to find all my contact information there. You'll also be able to find a bunch of easily accessible information on all of these topics. I've written, I've been doing asset protection planning for 20 years. As you said, I protect, help protect well over $7 billion in assets for clients all over the country. So what I've tried to do is give those I work with perfect 20/20 hindsight, where every time something bad happens, that is a risk that we can manage or a risk to be aware of, I write about it. I say, hey, this thing happens, and it happens repeatedly. And so all of that information is there as well at proassetprotection.com.
Our best to the families of the who were victims of the Gilbert Goons. And Ike, thanks for coming on the show.
Good to be with you, Bob. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the podcast. Is That Even Legal? Is now listened to in 100 countries and available on virtually all podcast platforms. Leave us a review, send us some show ideas, and do so at producer@evenlegal.com. Don't forget, as smart as we sound and as lovable as we are not your lawyers, and we are not giving you legal advice. But if you need some legal advice, get some. There are some great lawyers out there, and we are always ready to help. See you next time.